From KUAZ, Arizona Public Media, I'm Mark McLemore, and this is Arizona Spotlight. Coming up on today's show, here in Arizona, the impact of the country's economic slowdown is being felt by millions, and Latino residents are among some of the hardest hit. We'll hear more in a report from Claudine LaMonaco. Peter Michaels talks with Glenn Lyons, who since February has been the director of the Tucson Downtown Partnership, about the latest developments and new directions for downtown. It's summer vacation season, a good time for Pam White to speak with Dr. Kelly Reynolds, a University of Arizona microbiologist, with tips on how to minimize your exposure to germs while you're traveling. And Tony Paniagua talks to Dr. Victor Chamas about Wave 1, an event next week that urges people around the world to focus their feelings of love and joy together to make positive change. That's all coming up next, here on Arizona Spotlight. A new study shows that the economic downturn in our country has impacted Latinos, and particularly Latino immigrants, even more than the general population. The authors of the study place the blame largely on the slump in the construction industry. Next, Claudine LaMonaco visits the Tucson Community Food Bank to talk to some of those who are being directly affected.
Patricia Medina doesn't need a study to tell her times are rough. She's living it.
El trabajo de mi esposo está muy bajo y pues la economía está muy dura ahorita.
She says her husband, a roofer, has very little work. She says the economy is really bad and they don't have enough money to buy what they need. So she's come to the food bank to help feed her family, including her two young sons, Diego and Adrian, who have come with her.
Pues estirando el dinero como chicle. Estirando el dinero y pues...
She says she and her husband are stretching money like gum and trying to save whatever they can until things get better. According to a new study by the Pew Hispanic Center, Medina's family is not alone. The study found that the unemployment rate among Hispanics had grown to 6.5% by the start of 2008. That's nearly 2 points higher than for non-Hispanics. If you look at Hispanic immigrants, the statistics get even worse. They have an unemployment rate of 7.5%. Male immigrants from Mexico, like Medina's husband, are the worst off, with an unemployment rate of 8.4%. The study found that Latinos have been hardest hit because they made up a disproportionate share of the construction workforce during the housing boom. Now that the housing market has crashed, they're taking the hit. This is the first time Medina has come to the food bank.
Pues es leche en bote, leche en polvo, jugo, pasta.
She says the juice, vegetables, and milk in her cart will be a great help. Many others are turning here, too. Earlier today, 300 to 400 people stretched out in long lines waiting for the food bank to open. Bill Carnegie, who heads the bank, said people rushed in as soon as they unlocked the doors.
I had people come up to me and complain that they were being pushed out of the way, that, you know, there's one young lady and her mother's here in a walker, and she said 8 people cut in front of her. And it's very strange that we have to consider crowd control at a food bank. But times are so hard in this community right now. It's one of the sad truths we have to start dealing with on a daily basis.
Over the last year, the bank has seen a 27% increase in the number of people coming for help. Since 2006, they've seen a 50% increase.
One of our concerns is what's going to happen in the future, what's going to be going on a year from now. We're about at capacity for the number of food boxes that we can create.
Around 51% of the clients here are Hispanic, and most, 72%, are the working poor. They have jobs, but they can't get by on what they earn. Rakesh Kocher, a researcher with the Pew Center, led the study on Latino workers. He says we need to track what's happening with them for one simple reason: demographics.
The native-born non-Hispanic population is virtually at a standstill. Its growth rate is not zero, but only slightly above zero. And if you go down to who are the young among us, they are much more Hispanic than the adult population. The future of the U.S. labor market, the U.S. population, is Hispanic.
He says nearly one out of every 2 new workers in this country is Hispanic.
So they are the drivers of change in the labor force and what their skills are, what their earning power is, what they contribute, and how they are in turn affected. All these issues are of importance, I believe.
Kocher conducted the study by analyzing data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Census Bureau. Among his findings, he discovered that while the downturn has hit Latino immigrants particularly hard, there's no data to suggest they're going home. As with many of the immigrants at the food bank, he said they are more likely to stay put and tough it out. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Claudine LaMonaco.
It's been 9 years since Tucson voters approved what was called the Rio Nuevo Multipurpose Facilities District, now usually just known as Rio Nuevo. It was an ambitious plan to add more than a dozen high-profile residential and shopping areas to our downtown landscape. But since that time, only a couple of projects have seen any development. That's the situation that greeted Glenn Lyons last February when he arrived to assume his role as director for the Downtown Tucson Partnership. Glenn comes to Arizona after 20 years of experience as a city planner for Calgary, Alberta. He gives us his perspective on what's happening downtown next in this interview with Peter Michaels.
Can you give us a brief update on the revitalization of downtown so far?
Well, I just arrived in February, and we're starting to put together new programs, and we're working on some projects with the city and the county. But, you know, quite frankly, I think we're starting at square one. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. The projects with the city and county so far are going fairly well. We've got some good bids on the sale of the MacArthur Building. Two of them are at the appraised value. One of them will get selected by council, so that building will move back into the private sector and we'll get some new office workers. We're just starting that facade improvement program. Pretty shortly, we're going to be putting the county's Walgreens building on the market as well. So those are the immediate things that we're doing. I've got a couple of pieces of land that we're working on for development proposals. We're going more slowly on those because the market isn't so strong.
And are you working with the business community in the Tucson area? They've been a little gun shy about working with downtown with all the fits and starts in the past. And what about the city council? Are you getting support in that area?
We're getting good support from city council. They're allowing us to work on their projects to put a little private sector perspective into them, letting us take over the administration of some of them, selling these buildings, development RFPs and the like. We're getting cooperation from the county that's going through the similar basis. Right now, we're mostly working with the downtown business community, which, as you know, is very small. They're sort of our members, our bread and butter. That's our starting point. But my hope over time is that we can attract other business interests, if not to locate downtown, at least to invest in some of the arts and cultural activities that that we are developing, that we have already.
And the workers downtown are mostly 9-to-5 workers. Is that an impediment to creating a revitalized downtown?
Well, we've got 15,000 people working downtown, 10 working for the city and the county, and 5 for the private sector. There's no problem with having office workers downtown. They provide the spending base for the stores and the restaurants. We just don't have enough of them. You know, we aspire to be like Portland, which has 100,000 people working downtown, or Austin, which has 50. Downtown Tucson has 15,000. And so we need a lot more office workers, or we have to rely on other ways to attract spending.
And in Portland and Austin, a lot of those workers live in downtown, too. There's places to live and things to do at night.
That's right. The target market for downtown living is a downtown office worker. We have some decent communities around us, the Barrios, Armory Park, Iron Horse, West University and the like. They're good neighborhoods, and there's room for more housing in those areas, either along the commercial streets or infill housing. And, of course, we're next to U of A, so we've got the potential for student housing or what you call worker housing here, more affordable, smaller unit housing for people that might work for the government or the university. So we're going to have to work in those veins to begin with as opposed to the general population.
When you first came to town, you mentioned your theory of taking baby steps toward the revitalization. Are you sticking with that plan? Is it working? Is it quieting the critics?
Well, I don't think we'll ever quiet all the critics. This town has high aspirations, And they've been promised big things, and the delivery has been very poor. In part, they've been promised things that we weren't able to deliver because the downtown doesn't have enough office workers, the city isn't as wealthy as it needs to be, or we don't have the infrastructure in place. So a lot of the failure, if you like, was justified. So we really don't have a choice. We have to get back to basics. We've got to build our investments one small investment at a time, use that as a stepping stone for the future. And then we have to take advantage of the larger government investments in the arena and the hotel and the convention center as they come along. So there really is no other strategy, none that would be successful. If we lower Tucsonans' expectations down to a realistic level, then we've got an obligation to deliver as well. And so I'm trying to raise our delivery, if you like, at the same time as we're trying to become a little bit more realistic.
And there's been some discussion about the corridor between downtown and the university. Do you see progress in that area?
Well, I think there's work being done now. We're helping with it. I mean, I like to think that U of A is downtown. Tucsonans don't think that way because U of A is about 5 or 10 times the size of downtown Tucson. But they're only a mile apart. Fourth Avenue is a connector. And there is land in the downtown on either side of the tracks where development of student housing and housing for people who work at the university can happen, and we can start to build those connections. That plus the streetcar, when it arrives, will really knit us to U of A better, and we'll benefit, actually, I think, more than U of A will from that.
Sort of like the ASU Tempe environment there?
Absolutely. The reason why Tempe has become an interesting place downtown is because there are that many students and that many people working at ASU.
You wonder if the high gas prices are making people think, well, maybe moving closer downtown might not be such a bad idea.
Well, almost all the downtowns of major North American cities are having comebacks. And to the extent that they're centrally located or they're in a transit node, the changing gas prices are going to help us. The whole movement towards sustainability and a walkable urban living, it may only be 10 or 15% of the population, but if we manage to get to that level in Tucson, we'll do very well.
And yet Oro Valley and Marana seem to be very aggressive about development with the shopping mall going up there on Oracle. Does that keep you up at night?
Not at all. I mean, the suburban areas like Marana and Oro Valley have thousands of people living in them. They need the stores. They need the shops. They're going to need their own little commercial areas, downtowns, if you want to call it that. Those are healthy things in a metropolitan area. But I don't think our arts and culture are going to move there. I don't think our larger office operations are going to go to Marana. They're more likely to end up in a Williams Center area, which in many ways competes with downtown for a lot of the business that we have.
Next Friday, Glenn Lyons will be one of Bill Buckmaster's guests on Arizona Illustrated, appearing with Craig Shelko, the director of the City of Tucson's Rio Nuevo project. That's on Arizona Illustrated next Friday at 6:30 on KUAT TV Channel 6. Coming up in the second half of the show, find out where germs lurk, not just at home, but in the places you might visit on summer vacation. Plus, learn how you can play a part in next week's global spiritual event called Wave One. That's coming up next on Arizona Spotlight. Nobody wants to get sick during the summer, especially if you're on vacation. Leaving your comfort zone at home can put you at risk to exposure to a host of germs and bacteria. But next, Pam White brings us some tips from a University of Arizona microbiologist on using precautions to make your summer travels safer ones.
It's a time of year when people start packing for summer vacations, a time to get away from everything and leave all their troubles behind. Or can they?
Think about the airplane, for instance. We know that the tray tables, the call buttons, the armrests, the seats, all contaminated with bacteria, things like E. coli, MRSA.
Dr. Kelly Reynolds is a microbiologist with the U of A College of Public Health. It's her job to test public places for germs and let people know how they can improve their hygiene and health.
All we simply do to find the germs is take one of these swabs. We only have to sample a very, very small area to find the germs.
A popular place both here at home and away is an ATM.
And we take this back to the laboratory and test it for the germs. What we find on ATM buttons, on one ATM button, on average is about 30,000 bacteria. So just know when you're out and about and you're using the ATM, you're going to come into contact with germs.
Although we can't eliminate all the things we come in contact with when we travel, here are some tips for avoiding germs as much as possible in a hotel room.
And what we find is that a lot of times the cleaning staff are not using disinfectants. They may even be dipping the mop in the toilet to mop the floor. We find fecal bacteria, bodily fluids, all kinds of germs all over hotel rooms. There are still some things you can do, some very simple tips. I wouldn't use the glasses unless I knew they were disposable and properly sanitized. I would take my disinfecting wipes, wipe off that remote control, the doorknobs. Remember, you're sharing that space with a lot of other people that have been there before you. Just do a quick wipe down of the area that you're going to be living in for the next day or two.
Vending machines may seem fairly innocuous, but not according to Dr. Reynolds.
But what you may not know is about half of the buttons we test on vending machines fail our hygiene test, meaning they're very germy. We also find about 14% test positive for a bodily fluid. That's blood, urine, mucus, saliva. Those are fluids that humans excrete that also carry germs, and germs that can make you sick.
Many people will hit the highways and be traveling by car and stopping for fast food.
What I really recommend is that after you've paid for your food, you want to sanitize your hands with a gel hand sanitizer. That's your best substitute when soap and water are not available. So you want to be aware of some of the hot spots in the car too. Places that you touch that you rarely disinfect, those are going to harbor germs. Every once in a while, it's a good idea to take a disinfecting wipe, wipe those down. I do it once a week.
And in the top three hot spots for germs are children's car seats.
That is one of our top sites for isolating MRSA. MRSA is the methicillin-resistant staph bacteria that can cause skin infections and can even be fatal.
And if you have children and are traveling or are here for the summer, chances are you'll be going to a playground.
In fact, it's the number one place I find germs. About 50% of the playground equipment will test positive for fecal bacteria. And fecal bacteria transmits those germs that give you the stomach ache and the flu-like illnesses. We want to protect our children. And there's some very simple tips. Wash your hands frequently. If you don't have access to soap and water, use those gel sanitizers. I always come armed with disinfecting wipes at the playground. They're great for wiping off the tabletops before you sit down and have your picnic lunch.
Germs you don't want to come in contact with, E. coli, a bacteria that can cause serious food poisoning, and MRSA, a bacteria that lives on the skin but can creep into cuts or wounds and cause infection.
All we do is take a simple swab, like a Q-tip cotton swab, and we swab a small area about 2 inches on a car seat, on a bus seat, maybe the ATM buttons, and then we take it back to the laboratory and we see what germs we can find. Usually we're targeting germs that are transmitted by feces, like E. coli or Salmonella, germ that's transmitted by mucus, like the cold and flu viruses, or maybe even germs that are carried around on our hands, like the staph bacteria.
If people are becoming paranoid these days about germs and bacteria, Dr. Reynolds says they should be.
A lot of bacteria are resistant to antibiotics, so it's more important now than ever to prevent that first exposure. Don't rely just on your immunity. You'll be exposed to germs. You'll build your immunity. We want to prevent exposure as much as we possibly can.
To minimize your chances of being exposed to germs, it's important to use the right products.
But if it doesn't say disinfectant or sanitizer on the bottle, it's not doing that. The green cleaners now are very popular, and they're great cleaners. They smell fantastic. They don't kill germs.
Dr. Reynolds says we can't sterilize our whole world, nor should we. But we can take simple precautions to be healthier and safer.
You can reduce your illness rate by about 30% just by washing your hands more frequently and break that cycle of germ transmission by using disinfectants in your office areas, in your car, and in your home. Where you can break that cycle of germ contamination, do the best you can.
For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Pam White.
Around the world today, people are facing major challenges, including rising energy prices, food shortages, and the threat of violence and war. While some predict that the global situation will only get worse, others hope to bring about some positive change by using simple and basic measures. Next Wednesday at 7 p.m. local time, a global event is planned to help connect the world's people in the name of love and joy. It's called Wave One, and Tony Paniagua will speak with psychology professor, author, and healer, Dr. Victor Chamas, next, about how you can take part.
Thank you, Mark. I'm joined by Dr. Victor Chamas. He teaches psychology at the University of Arizona and leads a weekly global chant group right here in Tucson. We've talked to him about that in the past right here in Arizona Spotlight, but now he's working on a new project which hopes to unite the world with prayer, meditation, and other methods. Dr. Chamas, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Tony. It's great to be here.
Here's a very basic question. What does Wave 1 stand for? We know it's wave, like what you see in the ocean, and then followed by the number 1.
Yes, it's a wave of love and joy that's going to make its way around the world on June 18th from one time zone to the next in a 24-hour period. It starts at 7 p.m. in every time zone, and this wave of love and joy is going to encompass the world during that day.
And what are you asking people to do? I mentioned meditation, mentioned prayer, but you're asking people to do other things, and in fact, people will be doing other things.
Yes, we're asking people to basically immerse themselves in love and joy for a period of time starting at 7 p.m. in their time zone. It doesn't have to be formally spiritual. You don't have to pray or meditate. We have surfers. We have chocolate eaters who are dedicating whatever their love and joy is, that source of love and joy, to the earth and all its inhabitants at 7 p.m. on June 18th.
And how, for example, will surfing or prayer lead to a better world, to bring more joy, more peace to this very tumultuous time that we're living at the moment?
Well, we think that the structures that exist right now are really insurmountable. You know, we think back to the Berlin Wall. There was a time where we didn't think it could be brought down. But the truth is that there are two of the strongest forces on the planet at our disposal. Love is that energy that dissolves form, and joy is the expression through which new form is created. We're at a time in history where it's important to dismantle that form and create something new that is sustainable and peaceful and balanced on this planet. And I believe in my heart that love and joy can do that.
And Dr. Chamas, what would you say to those people who are detractors who think this is really very strange, that it won't work?
Well, there's always been detractors of love, but Jesus said, "Do not think I've come in peace. I have come bearing a sword." He knew that unconditional love was one of the strongest tools and weapons to dismantle form ever known to humanity.
And when we're talking about Wave One, we hear about one world, one circle, one cause. What is that all about?
Well, the idea is that we're coming together as one world regardless of what we believe. So we have people all over the planet. If you go to our website, waveone.org, you will see that over 40 countries around the world are participating in this event.
And what about the origins of Wave One? How did this all come about?
Wave One was inspired by a Tibetan Lama named Chuyang Dorje Rinpoche. And this man meditated for 45 years on love and joy. And at the end of 45 years, he had manifested these crystals from his body, 2,000 of them. He basically had taken his love and joy and used it as creative tools to manifest new form.
Tell us about the event itself. It's happening next week on Wednesday, June 18th.
Correct. In Tucson at 7 p.m. in our time zone, we're going to have the wave reach Tucson. And we're actually going to start 1 hour earlier at 6 p.m. And that's going to be at St. Pius X Church on the east side. The address is 1800 North Camino Pio Decimo. That's 1/2 mile west of Pantano on Pima. And if people want any information about where that event's going to be, they can go to our website. They can go to wave1.org. The event is going to include presentations from different facets of the spiritual community, including Thai monks who are going to do Buddhist chanting. We have Catholics. We have a choir. Joe Ray Fellowship Minister Henry Ajiki is going to do some energy healing work. It's going to be a very beautiful ceremony.
Do you think that this is going to become more important as we move into the future generations, as far as the world being so split, so divided?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what you're seeing is the formation of a global healing circle that is going to be in place for years to come. And we're going to do many more of these events. This Wave 1 event on June 18th is just the first. It's also important to note that we're going to do other kinds of events to benefit the planet, not simply those involving love and joy.
And then finally, what if I cannot leave my house or my home that particular day? Can I do something in the privacy of my own home?
Yes, whatever brings you love and joy, you can do that anywhere in the world where you're at. Just let us know where you're going to be.
All right, Dr. Victor Chamas, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Once again, the global event, Wave 1, takes place on Wednesday, June 18th at 7 p.m. For more information and directions to the meeting being held in Tucson, we have links online. That's at KUAZ.org. And now here's the Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar with Stephanie Varney.
Tonight, The Loft will host an all-night Screamorama. 12 hours of horror movies will be shown, and there will be a talk with Linnea Quigley, star of Return of the Living Dead. So bring your pajamas and a pillow, because this event starts at 7 p.m. and runs until 7 a.m. Tomorrow is Flag Day, and the Postal History Foundation is celebrating with exhibits and tours dealing with the first issue of the Arizona Flag postage stamp. There will also be music, activities for kids, and refreshments. It all starts at 10 a.m. The Fox Tucson Theater Summer Movie Series continues tomorrow night with Universal's 1931 version of Frankenstein. The movie starts at 7:30. Contact foxtucsontheater.org for more information. Reed Park Zoo is having a Father's Day barbecue this Sunday. There will be truck and dragster displays, barbecue demonstrations, and a picnic-style dinner for families to enjoy. The barbecue starts at 5 p.m. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Stephanie Varney.
That's Arizona Spotlight for this week. Thank you for listening. Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio, Arizona Public Media, and was produced in the KUAZ studios by Ginger Duran. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. The music heard on our program, including the theme, was written and performed by Calexico. Podcasts of Arizona Spotlight are available online at KUAZ.org. I'm Mark McLemore.